enjoy a good squeeze.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm Margo.
And I'm August.
And this is A Good Squeeze.
The show where we squeeze a little bit of that James Bond into our everyday lives, including the holiday season.
Any holiday, any time, any year.
And, you know, this particular wintry holiday season, you know, you get your Christmas tree perhaps, or maybe you get some presents, maybe you celebrate Hanukkah, what have you.
Make a garland.
Or maybe, hey, maybe you get the cold and flu.
Yeah.
So, Margo and I were bitten by the bug.
Pestilence.
So, if we sound huskier, if we have a cough or a snort here and there, it's just for your immersion.
Yeah. Really, like, we want over-ear headphones for you guys this time.
Yeah.
We want you guys to really crank up the volume.
4D.
Hear all that snot and mucus gurgling through our lungs. I almost forgot our intro. Because of how sick we are.
Yeah.
I was like, hi. You're like, hello. I was like, well, here we are.
But the show must go on.
Mm-hmm.
And we're continuing the squeeze-mas season.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the quintessential Christmas James Bond film, On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Mm-hmm. And why is it a quintessential holiday film?
Well, James Bond Christmas film, because it's the only one that takes place during Christmas.
There you go.
Now, there are those of us who enjoy James Bond at any time, or a certain ones, particularly around the Christmas time, but we're not talking about those. We're talking about On Her Majesty's.
That's right. I'm hoping that someone who is listening is just as sick as us, and is pretty much on the same wavelength of cognitive functioning. And anytime we say something, they're like, ha, 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 that's good. Because that's what you're getting. It's going to be quality, but it can be a little... This is either going to be the most seductive episode or the nastiest episode.
Sounds like Roger Moore. You taste like butterscotch.
Come here. Nasty man.
I'll tell you what, this movie, On Her Majesty's, is very precious to many. Often in people's top fives, often in maybe even people's favorites of the James Bond films. Where did this one, I'm just going to get right into it, novice, nostalgic, the novice here, right out the gate. How'd you feel about On Her Majesty's Secret Service?
I think this movie, a callback to our previous episodes with the Muppets, there has never been a more perfect fit for Kermit to play James Bond. He is just floppy and whoa! Like, I don't know, it was too many homages. He wasn't in the character. He knew how to emulate Bond, but it didn't feel like I was looking at Bond. It felt like a guy faking his way through a movie, which, from what you've told me, isn't entirely false.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about it that just, you know, like all the little, I, you know, I get it with the homage. You want people to, you know, this was the first time ever that they changed Bonds, right? And they didn't tell people. Was that accurate?
I think they did, but they didn't advertise it too much.
Okay.
Like, even in the original posters, it was like, not shown his face too much. Even in some of the trailers, there's an opening shot of Bond riding in a car, lighting a cigarette. They use that quite a bit.
Okay.
They didn't want to bring too much attention to it, I believe.
So I'm guessing they were bringing in homages in self-defense. Like, don't worry, guys, this is a James Bond film. Look, he's whistling the previous movie's song, which doesn't make any sense. How would he know that was a song? We're the only ones who know. It's opening credits. My opening credits that someone made up while while the FBI is filming me. I've never heard that song, so I don't know what it is. How would I know to whistle it? There's so much about it that just, it felt like the first attempts at like the multiverse.
Oh, okay.
You know, like it felt like that, but it's just because they didn't know what the multiverse was, or maybe they did. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I don't know, there's something a little sloppy about it for me, and a little too hey, instead of making this, like, our movie, this is our movie, you guys can like it or hate it. They were like, but what will the people say? What do you think they're gonna, like, I don't know, there's just, it was too obvious. And obviously, that's movie making. Everybody, all the, like, what do you call them, the studios and everything, they're gonna be like, well, people really like multiverses, so we should throw that into, you know, Pretty Women or Little Women or whatever, you know, like, it's, they do that all the time. But, it's, you know, it just seemed too much of that.
Too, like, much, too much, yeah, for you?
Like, it, to me, invited a tantrum. Because it was like, look, he is Bond. It's like when you tell a kid, like, okay, if any kids are listening, sorry, big spoiler alert. But it's like, your dad's in the Santa suit. And you're like, no, that's Santa. And they're like, no, that's Dad. And they're like, no, that's Santa. He's like, no, that's Dad. It's, and that frustration, because there's that fight, like, back or whatever, that whatchamacallit, I am being loud, sorry, because there is that argument happening of like, yes, this is Bond, and people are like, no, it's not. It almost invites that, you know, by trying to cushion it. They should have just been like, this is Bond, like it or not. Confidence reaps results, not all the time, to like, don't apply that to your relationships, but you know, but apply it to your movie making. If you think you have a good idea, just do it. Well, again, in movies, don't try to pander to the audience. That's terrible advice. I don't know what I'm talking about, you guys. All right, I'm sick. Yeah. August, what did you think of this movie?
As we stated at the beginning, hey, cold, flu, and that. I really love this movie. It's definitely in my top 10. I say this a lot. I've been on a journey with this movie, but in not a very long one, and here's what I mean. You know, when I was younger, I got that that DK, like, World of James Bond book, and I studied that thing when I was, you know, 8, 9, 10. And I would, you know, study the movies that I hadn't seen quite yet. You know, I grew up in the woods, so it wasn't too accessible for me to even go out and, you know, beg my parents to buy a new James Bond movie. It would very seldomly happen. It would be a birthday or a Christmas, or we're visiting grandma and grandpa because they had an FYE close by. And I remember particularly on Her Majesty's Secret Service was interesting to me as a, you know, 9, 10-year-old, because it had the longest title of any Bond movie. I noticed that, you know, George Lazenby was only in this one picture, you know, like, he's only in one Bond movie. And I know this sounds funny, but as a 9, 10-year-old, I thought Diana Rigg, who played Tracy, I was like, she's ugly. Oh, man. And then we went to visit Grandma and Grandpa. We're at an FYE. And at the time, I had every Bond movie that was available at the store except for On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And we got that one, and I have a very vivid memory of watching it for the first time and basically going into it hating it. I knew, like I'm saying, 9, 10, I knew I wasn't going to like this movie by choice. I already thought Tracy was ugly, and I was like, oh, yeah, I had the mentality, this guy's only in one Bond movie. He must not be good. And, you know, being young, watching this damn near 2.5 hour long movie, I was bored out of my wits, and I didn't like it. And for years and years and years, it was my least favorite James Bond movie. I never revisited it again for a very long time. And I don't know when it happened. I can't tell you when. I was definitely a teenager, though, so it wasn't too much longer after I finally rewatched it, and I was like, there's something cozy. There's something cozy about this movie. And
that's where it all started.
That's where it all started. Maybe so. Maybe so. And I found myself watching this movie more and more and more. And maybe it was the bubblings of my inner hipster. I was like, against myself. Like, that. There's only, you know, this is the only one with George Lazenby. And this is the most, like, emotional of all the Bond movies. And it felt different. And I don't know. It was like really snowy and Christmassy, and I had all these new memories associated with it, as opposed to my first view. And then as time has gone on, I get more involved in like consuming James Bond content, whether it's, you know, official stuff or like fan stuff. I've come to realize this is a very precious movie to a lot of people. Therefore, it kind of grew in myself to be like, you know what? I do really like that movie quite a bit. I now also, now that I'm older, I find this like the most Fleming feel of the Bond movies.
Can you define a Fleming feel?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, here's what I mean by that, I guess. Watching this movie feels like reading a book.
Oh.
You know, it has like so much detail and I don't know, the warmth of reading a book. What is a Fleming feel? I don't know if I can presently put that into words, whether I have never sat on it long enough to think of that or I have a cold. But maybe you out there listening know what I mean by Honor Majesty's feels like the most Fleming. I know some people feel like Timothy Dalton's portrayal of Bond is like the most Fleming-esque. Mm-hmm. I'm saying like the whole kit and caboodle here.
Yeah, there's a difference between accuracy and feel. Mm. So, you know.
Maybe so.
So, yeah. Haha, everyone.
But yeah, you know, I've revisited this movie many, many, many times. It went from being my least favorite to now it's like very securely top 10, top 5. And I wish we got more George. Yes, he's probably not the best Bond, but that doesn't make him bad. He's only in the one. He was supposed to do like 7.
Wait, what happened? I remember you telling me this, but I'm 6, so I don't remember.
Yeah, so the short version, you know, Sean Connery was James Bond. They were getting ready to do You Only Live Twice. And he had a rough go at it, whether it was, you know, paparazzi, you know, just like working conditions and that being, you know, while actually being on set and butting heads with like Harry Saltzman and, you know, Cubby Broccoli, just, you know, butting heads with producers. And overall, Sean Connery was just done. He was done. Mm. And he was offered to come back for the next film. He asked for an outrageous sum of money and they just couldn't come to agreements on it. So they began a hunt for the next James Bond. George Lazenby, who had only done some commercial work, loved the idea of James Bond. So he kind of emulated Bond in a way of he, you know, got the same haircut as Sean Connery did, I believe, from the same barber. He sought out like where Sean Connery got his suits made and was able to pick up an unpicked up suit from Sean Connery. Yeah.
Little rat.
And ultimately he snuck his way into a meeting with Cubby Broccoli. And he's like, I hear you're looking for the next James Bond. And, you know, he lied about his credentials, essentially. Like, oh, I did many films in, like, Germany and all these places you never heard of. So don't even bother looking it up.
It was a different time.
It was a different time.
Don't bother looking it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
He ultimately came clean to Peter Hunt, who was the director of this movie. And Peter Hunt said, like, no, you're actually a great actor. You fooled, like, some of the most ruthless men in the business.
Maybe they're not all that ruthless.
They signed him on for a multi-film deal. He was young. He didn't have a lot of experience and they could hire him cheap. I think that's really why.
Oh my God, really? Like they totally knew the whole time. They were just like, I mean, this is all we can pay you. And he's like, I fooled them. And they're like, okay, idiot. Honestly, you know, when you're at work or something or just like around someone who's like not particularly smart, but they think they're like a genius. No, it's cool. I'm not that smart, but I don't think I'm smart. So that's okay.
Maybe you're this person you're describing.
Yeah. Right. I'm like, I'm actually really smart, you guys. And then you fool them. And then they're like, you know, like it's really hard to fool me. So you must be really smart. And you're like, God, I have terrible news for you. This was the easiest thing I could possibly do.
Yeah.
I had a job as social media manager for a specific job that I shall not name. But yeah, they were just the two biggest idiots, and I did it all the time. They were like, it's crazy you got away with this, because we're really smart. I'm like, yeah, of course you're smart, and I'm a big dumb dummy. Anyways, that was a great anecdote. Anyway, moving on. Everyone loved that. You can cut that out.
I mean, that was also part of it is Sean Connery, when he signed on to be James Bond and have like a multi-film deal, he wasn't a big star, but then he became like one of the biggest stars in the world. Okay. So he wanted to renegotiate and they weren't willing to play ball. That led into You Only Live Twice. So I feel like with George Lazenby coming in, they're like, we're going to hire him for a lot of films and see where it goes. You know, watching this movie, yes, he's not the greatest, like I said, but it doesn't mean he's bad. His delivery, it could use some refining. Mm-hmm. I would be so curious if, like you're saying, like in a multiverse, if we ever got to see George Lazenby in a second Bond film or a third, you know, like see him come into his own.
Mm-hmm. I feel like at the time that was so much more acceptable. You just give somebody a try and then you give him another chance and another chance. Now it's like, if you suck, sorry, guy.
Yeah, there's so much money that goes into all these. Yeah. And you know, the film was successful.
Of course.
Yeah. It wasn't as successful as the previous, like, few. So, but it still made a lot of money. Mm. Like, it wasn't a bomb in any means. So, you know, the business was going to keep going with George Lazenby. But he got some really bad advice from an agent of his, basically saying, like, the spy genre is on the outs.
Oof.
And you don't want to be involved in this. Nice. And, you know, George Lazenby grew his hair out and grew a beard. It was very, like, you know, hippie of the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, going to premieres, like, looking like that. Like, they were not happy with, you know, Eon was not happy with George Lazenby's attitude.
That sucks.
So they cut ties, ultimately, and gave Sean Connery what he wanted for the next one.
That is unfortunate, because, like, you know, that's why you got to do it for the passion. You got to do it for the love of the game, not the money. Because if he had just said, hey, I like being James Bond. I want to be James Bond. I don't care. I don't care what you say. I'm my own man. I'm going to follow my dreams. Who knows what would have happened?
Yeah, you know, it's...
Less Roger Moore. Crazy. Man, that's crazy.
Being impressionable in this, like, business, you know, it's very fascinating to, like, read up on those things and just see how history kind of played out. But that, I think that adds to this movie, the allure of this movie of, it's like a fine line of being what it is and being what could be. And, there's some mystery to it. It feels like an unfinished business kind of movie. Cause like the way it ends is so poignant and powerful and emotional. And up to this point, the most emotional of all the Bond movies. You know, James Bond gets married and then his wife gets killed. Like, you know, up to this point, and in my opinion, like, that's like the best Bond girl, James Bond relationship. Mm-hmm. And they fall in love and you really feel that. Despite, you know, George Lazenby's acting limitations, by the end of the film, like that final scene that always puts a little lump right here, right next to my mucus. Right here. always. And, yeah, like the story doesn't get to resolve as far as films go, you know, in the books certainly. But, yeah, I think that's also why people revere this movie so much, is just 'cause it's like its own little time capsule. And there's, people like get connected to it because of all those things I'm saying, but I do feel it does have to do with it being like a kind of a one-off. It's like a little jewel. There's only one of it kind of thing.
Mm. Do you think there's, I mean, like in terms of the public reaction, do you think people feel that way in general?
Not necessarily. And that might come into the verdict by the end of this conversation.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, wait. Yeah. Sorry, that's the whole point of our podcast. Sorry, whoops. I was gonna ask you, this was a question I was gonna ask someone we were guests on a podcast. I'm not gonna tell you who it was. I had a question at the end, but I was gonna save it. But I'm just gonna say it now, and then we can reiterate it later. Being someone who witnessed a new Bond coming in, how, you know, because at the time that wasn't the norm. That was not expected. That wasn't something that was implied. It wasn't advertised.
We weren't conditioned to do such a thing.
But you were conditioned. Did that at all help with the transition into a new Bond? Or do you think it would have been better not seeing it coming?
That's a, well, I don't think it would be better not seeing it coming, but, I don't know. I almost have to say we'll see because I've only really experienced it once, you know, Pierce Brosnan.
Once is enough.
Yeah, that's a good James Bond title.
Thank you. That is a good James Bond title.
you know, I only transitioned from Pierce Brosnan into Daniel Craig, and I was young, and it was my first time, and now it happening this, well, upcoming, that would be a better way to answer that question. Mm. I mean, I've said it before, at the time when they did announce Daniel Craig, I was not happy about it.
Yeah.
I was actually pretty angry about it because I loved Pierce Brosnan so much, and they did announce that he was going to be making a fifth movie. And then all of a sudden they went a different direction, and as a 12-year-old I was pissed off. So I don't know, that's a good question. So like back in the day, how was it received? I don't know. I don't know.
I wish we could ask someone.
Yeah, if only there were people out there who experienced it.
Who were old enough.
Yeah.
We're just too young, you know.
I've talked to my dad about it before, and I remember he said he watched Honor Majesty's in the theater, and he thought it sucked. But that's just because he was probably 11 years old. It's maybe similar to me, and he wanted Sean Connery, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
He's like, what the heck is this? So, I don't know. Let me ask you a question. How did you feel about, I said, let me ask you a question, and 40 came to mind. I spoke on the relationship between James Bond and Tracy.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel that was portrayed?
A little odd, you know, she's like, I'm not like other girls, so, sorry. All right, we can't cut that one out. I think it was portrayed kind of chip-choppy. You know, she was very like, I don't like you at all, I think. And then he was like, but do you? And then she was like, oh, Papa, what do you think? You know, I don't know. It just seemed a little bit, I like that there was some kind of evolution in the beginning. But then it kind of just, I want to say disappeared for a hot minute. Then he sleeps with other women. Like.
And it disappears for a hot minute because literally they're not around each other for a hot minute.
But that doesn't make any sense. I thought they liked each other. You know, I thought, I don't, whatever.
It's for queen and country.
Guys, I'm getting a little older, as you can hear. And I'm at the point where we'll be watching a show or a movie, including this movie, and they'll start kissing or doing it. And I'll go, oh my God. Oh my God. Cover your eyes. Like, I am like the old lady who's like, oh, that's so indecent. Like, I get really emotional about it. It grosses me out like it did when I was 5. Yeah, I don't know. It's so
you're saying you've always been an old lady?
I stopped from 5 to 30, right? So, the young buck. I don't know. I thought that was a little shocking. I know it's James Bond, but it's a different James Bond. He seems to be in love in this one. And I don't know. I'd be upset, frankly. I know she doesn't know, but that kind of makes it worse.
that's true.
And then they get married, and they're going away in their little car, and they're like, we have all the time in the world or something, right? Like, or something, yeah. And then it's like, bang, 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 dead. The end. You know? Like, I was like, oh, no funeral, no. Just, like, at least draw it out a little bit more. It just seemed like a Shakespearean play, where it's like, and now everything's resolved. The end. You know? Yeah, and then it goes into that, like, brassy, like, ain't this fun? It's like, no, she's dead. Got married. I would be... I don't know. And he's like, she's sleeping. Again, you know, I get that. That's like, you know, their approach to him in denial, which is very sweet. But also, I don't know, just kind of abruptly ended. I wasn't into that. But again, like, that's a new era of Bond, I guess, is the best way I can describe it. Like, I don't understand that trope, and it hasn't grown on me. So to answer your question, I don't like it.
You don't like the relationship between Bond and Tracy.
Don't love it. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I say it's interesting because, as I said, to me, it's one of the best. It's not my favorite, but it's one of the best.
Mm.
But, you know, there's like a hollowed ground of certain things in James Bond, like Bond girls, Tracy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bond romances, Tracy.
And also
in the top.
the way that you felt about Tracy when you were youngin', it's how I felt about Christian Bale. I remember talking to my older sister. She's 11 years older than me, so she was more of that. You know, she was old enough to understand why Christian Bale is muy guapo. And I remember being like, Christian Bale isn't. I told her. She was like, he's so handsome. I was like, he's ugly. He's an old dude. Like, I remember being like, no, that's not a hot guy. Zac Efron is a hot guy. I know hot guys, you know. And then I distinctly remember the moment. What were we watching?
The Prestige.
Nah, this was pre you. I was old enough. I was in my 20s.
What do you mean, what were we watching?
Me and, you know, individual, I guess, whatever. It must have been like The Dark Knight or something. And I was like, oh, I get it now. I get it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so another great anecdote.
I mean,
we
were watching. Swish. You're not interrupting me.
I'm telling a story. I'm still talking.
The end.
Why did you yell at me?
So many times.
Yeah.
When we were watching Honor Majesty's this time, there's the scene near the beginning when they're playing Texas Hold'em, playing polka, and Hermes Baccarat, and Tracy shows up and plays and loses, but that's her, like, you know, well, it's not her intro, obviously, before the credits, but her reintroduction. And I remember looking at you, and I was just like, when I was younger, I thought she was ugly. What a fool.
Yeah.
What a fool I was.
You've grown into a man of good taste.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we're kind of jumping the gun with the verdict. We'll reiterate the verdict later. Mm-hmm. But I've always felt this way about this movie too. Is I've always been so curious introducing it to new people and how they accept it, because. Like yourself, you're not really, I'm feeling that you weren't digging it too much.
No, definitely not.
Whereas, like, I don't want to say seasoned Bond fans, but people who are deep in James Bond, they tend to really love this movie.
One thing I did really love is the portrayal of Blofeld.
I loved
that portrayal.
Let's talk about Blofeld. What about Telly Savalas? Did you like... Did you like his portrayal for Blofeld?
It was cool. He was spooky. He was a scary guy. Like, the almost like, come in. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't ask any questions. Look over here. I'm speaking now. Like, it just seemed very convincing.
There's nothing evil going on here. Look at my wool hat.
Yeah.
My Sherpa hat, rather.
Yes. It was fur hat. Oh, Sherpa?
I don't know.
Comment in the comments.
Looked like he just skinned a sheep and put it on his head.
That's right. He might have. It was cool. Did I spill water? Oh, I did. He was convincing, and it was a nice interpretation of the character, which is what was missing with James Bond, is like your own interpretation. I loved his candor. I loved his mannerisms, his little hand, you know, missing a few fingies.
He wasn't missing a finger.
What was it?
It was just
a little shorter.
Just a little shorter, that's
okay,
all.
Okay, yeah.
Nothing just wrong with
which
a little
is
shorter.
Fine. Which is fine. We're happy with that. Yeah, I like those tiny little nuances, the way that he interacted with the props. Mm-hmm. Was he lighting a cigarette or something?
I love the way he smokes a cigarette.
Yeah.
Like, hold.
It's funny, too, because it's like, for him, it looks so comfortable. And I saw you do that one time.
Oh, I do that, yeah.
And I was like, what are you doing? Like, it felt unnatural. And I was like, what are you? And now I get it. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, whether it's a cigar or what have you, I'll hold it like
it's your signature now.
Like Blofeld holds
the
it.
The thing is, you have to do it consistently. Otherwise, it looks like you don't know how to hold a cigarette. So, but you do it. You do it. I don't know. Just the way he was, he looked like he slept in that weird gray suit. Mm. You know, like what you wanted from James Bond, he gave. That's how I feel about it. What about you?
Telly Savalas' portrayal of Blofeld is I think my favorite, overall. Like, I want more of that too, of him and that character. Cause pretty, other than, what's his name? Christoph Waltz. Mm-hmm. We've never had like a consistent portrayal of Blofeld. It's always like a different actor. And I would have loved to see Telly come back. Because I don't know that, yeah, there is like a coolness to him. It must be the richness of his voice. I taught you to love chickens, love their flesh. Does that sound like him? Maybe.
Yes.
I can only do it when I have a cold.
Me too. That was good.
I do what I mean, and I mean what I say. I don't know if he said that.
Hey, Macarena.
yeah, he's intimidating in that regard. Whereas, like, Donald Pleasance, who plays him in the previous film, he's got a big scar. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got that iconic look. He's menacing. He's, like, not blinking. He's just, like, staring at you. But he has, like, this quality in his voice that isn't as intimidating. And that's just a preferential thing, right? I prefer this in my villain, not this. Like, kill Bond now!
It's easy to parody. That one.
I mean, they do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The other one, not so much. I wonder if Mike Myers had gone the direction to parody that one over the classic one. I don't know why he would have done that, but would we feel the same?
Maybe not. Maybe not. That's a good question, too.
Thank you. I'm full of good questions.
I love, and beyond the performance, just the plot of this film, I find it very interesting. You know, he's putting on this moniker of this count so he can, take control of this this facility to create this, like, virus that he's going to put these angels of death out into the world, all these different parts of the world, and they're going to release this toxin to kill crops unless his demands are met.
Yeah.
I love that kind of stuff. It's just, like, it's unique in that way. Or it's unique in...
Yeah.
That way.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about some of the ladies, the angels of death?
The actual characters themselves. I love that they had camaraderie. I like that they got along and they were all happy to be together and they were celebrating their ailments being cured and, you know, kind of dissecting Hillary, blah, 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 to, you know, I don't know, their own amusement.
Mm-hmm.
I liked them. I thought they were fun. They were like the most fun part of that movie, other than Blofeld, but he wasn't necessarily fun. He was more compelling.
He's a laugh riot.
Yeah, but yeah, no, I liked it. I liked their whole shtick. I like that they're all kind of sneaking around too. They know how to open the doors, you know? I liked them. Yeah. I do think they added a little whimsy and they, I had no problem with them. I love the fashion. I love the dialogue. I thought it worked really well. Yeah. What about you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I was saying earlier, I love the dinner scene and, yeah, the sneaking around and stuff and, you know, Bond making his way from, like, one room to another is a, I don't know, is it the best part of the movie? It might be. It's the most entertaining part of the movie, perhaps. I also, when I was younger, I didn't care for Ruby at all. You know, now we watch it, I'm like, she's great. And I remember you were saying you're digging her outfits, every single one of them. And as far as Bond villain lairs go.
Ooh, cozy.
Oh, cozy.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites.
I like that a lot.
And it's a real place, too. Like, you can go and have lunch there.
Mm-hmm.
You can go ski the slopes. One day, we'll go there.
One day.
One day.
We're just too sick right now.
That's right. Maybe tomorrow.
Maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, Piz Gloria is definitely like a bucket list item or bucket list location to go to. But yeah, its use as a set piece is awesome, just visually, but how it's, you know, utilized with the dinner scene. That's a great scene in the movie. But some people are kind of iffy on that scene, and I'll tell you why. It's because Bond... George Lazenby is dubbed, and he spends so much of the runtime in this character as Hillary Bray.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, what's he say? Malt whiskey and branch water, please.
What is branch water?
That's it's when you take a branch and you squeeze it till the water comes
like
out.
Like a good squeeze.
I don't think that's what it is. I don't know what branch
Look
water
at that.
Is.
Sound off in the comments.
Yeah, some people just don't care for that because it takes up too much of the screen time.
Yeah.
But I love that dinner scene. And then James Bond's escape of Piz Gloria. I was getting all hyped up when that was happening this time because he gets on the skis and the music kicks in like broom, 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 broom. And he makes his escape and it's good fun. Which then, I know we're leaving Piz Gloria, but then goes to... One of my favorite scenes, too, is when Bond goes into that little village and he's, like, hiding. And
a little holiday market.
Yes.
Yeah.
So cozy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wearing a great coat. That's another thing to shout out. All the fashion in this movie.
Incredible.
Yeah, you would agree.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any clothing pieces that stick out in your head?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. What about, I'm too sick right now to think about it. I'm so sorry. I liked all the women's outfits.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. I was like, ooh, I would love to reinterpret that in my Margot way, which means baggier and bigger. But, like, I did love, like, the color combinations and how each of them was, like, you know, dressed very to their style.
I really appreciated that. You liked Ruby's outfit quite a bit.
Yep, yep, yep.
And her glasses.
Her glasses. Love the glasses. That's my answer. There mm-hmm. you go. Any kind of headwear, any kind of facewear they had, like, I thought was excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, now that we're talking about the holiday market, could you paint with all the foods and all the delicacies that they were serving? Can you paint a picture for us as to what you prepared for us?
Yeah, you know, I it was about to get away from me. Thank you for bringing us back in. Because I always say I want to, like, showcase what we do conceptually for a good squeeze, which is, you know, the immersion mm-hmm. of essentially dinner and a movie. I always forget to talk about it. But yeah, for on Her Majesty's Secret Service, yes, there is a very, as far as Bond goes, an iconic dinner scene where everyone's eating, like, a unique piece of food. I thought about making, like, a little bit of this, a little bit of that from that scene. Even Bond himself eats something called, like, steak pis gloria. I thought about making that.
Mm-hmm.
But that would go to the whole concept, like, if when they're eating it in the movie, we're eating it in real life, so you can point and whistle.
Yeah.
but we were kind of able to do that with what I ultimately made, which, you know, this movie takes place in Switzerland. So I just did a Swiss apéro.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, like, our own individual kind of, like, charcuterie plates. Check it out on Instagram. I'll post a picture of what we feasted upon.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just like I said, a smorgasbord of stuff, you know, Swiss cheeses like Tetouan and Gruyere, a lot of pickled things, carnichon and artichokes.
I'm so proud of you with your French pronunciation.
but then I had like carrots and bits of chicken.
Yeah.
And
it was really good.
Some spiced meats.
It was a lot of food. It didn't look like a lot of food, but
raclette.
That's what it was. And yeah. They were serving raclette in the film.
That's right. Did get to Whistling Point at yep. the, it was at the Christmas market.
Yep.
There was a raclette stand. I'm like, ha-ha, ha-ha. That's, uh-huh. See, I didn't even know it. But
I pointed it out.
Yes. Yeah. And
give me credit. No, I'm joking.
That's you and I pointing.
Yeah.
Together. So yeah, that's what we feasted upon. It was just a smorgasbord of Swiss stuff.
Yeah.
While we watched this movie, and we were probably eating and snacking the whole way through. Mm-hmm. It was nice.
It was really lovely. I highly recommend it. Just do a charcuterie board if you don't want to cook.
Yeah.
Just throw it on a piece of wood. That's it. God, I'm really highbrow today. It's really warm.
Put it on some wood and call it a day. Oh, man.
Sorry.
But that is where we get reintroduced to Tracy mm-hmm. for a third time, or fourth time maybe at this point. But yeah, I love that scene where he's like hiding out at the ice skating rink and mm-hmm. she shows up and saves the day, and they bunker down in a barn in yeah. the snow. It's so cozy. And because that barn scene was so cozy, it got me thinking again about the holidays, and there was the Christmas market and all that fun, good stuff. And I was thinking about this being the quintessential James Bond Christmas movie. Is it a Christmas movie? There's always these debates with films like Die Hard. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Is Gremlins a Christmas movie? Is On Her Majesty's Secret Service a Christmas movie just because it takes place during Christmas? And I want to kind of put it to bed once and for all that all of the above are Christmas movies, just by a simple Google search. If you type in what is like the definition of a Christmas movie, and I'm reading this off, but a Christmas movie is generally defined as a film set during the holiday season that incorporates festive elements, lights, music, and trees. So that's one little bit. Yes, this movie takes place during the Christmas season. Hell, Blofeld's even decorating a tree. Merry Christmas, 007.
Yeah.
And there's a whole Christmas market and all that good, cozy Swiss stuff. And centers around themes like family, redemption, love, togetherness. Hell, James Bond gets married in this movie.
And he has sex with a lot of women.
Yeah, togetherness.
Yeah.
Love, perhaps.
You don't need love for that.
Redemption. Like, there's all these different character arcs for Tracy herself, mm-hmm. but also for Bond. You know, coming full circle with his relationships, I suppose. Let's see. Togetherness. Generosity. Hey, wasn't it generous that James Bond saved the damn world?
Yeah. He didn't have to do that.
That's what Christmas is all about. often featuring central characters' transformations. Oh, we just said that. Or a plot resolved by Christmas. Now, often it says that. No, it's not necessarily resolved by Christmas, mm-hmm. but damn, it's resolved at Christmas.
Well, neither is Die Hard. And neither is, let me pick like a concrete Christmas movie. Neither is
Home Alone.
Home Alone, yeah, it's resolved by them showing up. You could argue that's Christmas, but it's not. We're objective here on A Good Squeeze, okay? And we say it's a Christmas movie. They have a whole gift exchange.
They do.
Like, they celebrate Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've heard the argument, like, Die Hard isn't a Christmas movie because, you know, there's, like, no Christmas elements other than it takes place during Christmas. I'm like, that is not true at all.
Yeah.
Gifts are given. I have a machine gun now. Ho, ho, ho. And isn't it generous that Bruce Willis saved all those hostages from the terrorists?
Yeah. You know? Generosity, gifts, Santa reference.
Santa references.
Yeah. During Christmas. The
gift
fact
exchanges.
That it's during Christmas. That should settle it.
Yeah.
Also,
that's enough.
Who, you know, if you're going to like die on the hill, like, it's not a Christmas movie, stay home. I don't want to talk to someone like that. Just say, oh, I disagree, and then just go about your merry little way. And then if you're going to be the opposite, where you're like, it is a Christmas movie, we don't have to yell. We can just be happy and disagree, and then we can all go home. But it is a Christmas movie. So.
Are you happy, and do you disagree with the fact that On Your Majesty's Secret Service is a Christmas movie?
It
definitively
is.
So. Not just a James Bond Christmas movie, but a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
The end.
You don't need any context prior to it. That's another big thing. It's not part of like a sequence. It's not like, you know, don't worry, they tell you all the homages anyway, so you don't really need to do your research. So the fact that it is standalone, you don't need any context, it's happening during Christmas, they do a gift exchange, you know, they got a tree, and that's like kind of the whole, you know, setting. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then yeah, I agree. What about you? Sorry, I'm like so
up, down, or cold medicine's kicking in, it's waning off.
I don't do no cold medicine.
Oh, maybe that's the problem.
Pilgrim.
Sorry. You know, just rewinding back, I realized you made a point at the very beginning when I came in strong and asked, like, do you like this movie? And you're like, no. You said earlier that you didn't like the homages.
Mm-hmm.
Like in neon lights, like, this is Bond, this is Bond. The opening credits, you know, has scenes literally from previous Bond films. There's that, I like this scene, but when Bond's cleaning out his desk, there's this little props from past adventures, letting you know this is the same guy, right? And music cues, which was bugging you.
If that was the case, oh, go ahead, sorry.
There's that famous scene at the very beginning when Bond, you know, saves the girl and beats up the bad guys, and she drives away with his car, and he says, you know, this never happened to the other fella.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wink and a nod, breaking the fourth wall, maybe, of telling people, like, hey, we know I'm not Sean Connery, but it's okay. Da, 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 da. Like, I don't mind those things. Maybe it's just because I've accepted them a long time ago, and I've just lived with it for, you know, pretty much all my life. But as someone who's a novice and hasn't seen this movie many times, maybe for you, you're like, that's cheesy, or, like, that's too on the nose. Like, I don't need that.
Yeah.
And I've just been so accustomed to it, I don't care. Like, it doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think about it. I just accept it.
Yeah. What's the question?
Do you agree, I guess? Like,
why
did that bother you so much that they were like, this is Bond, don't worry?
This is, I'm not a fan of homages.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of them in general. I don't like it when people reference other movies from the past and this and that. Like, it's overdone. It's overplayed. It's tired, you know? Like, I get it at the time. That must have been really fresh and new because that wasn't exactly a thing people were doing. But it didn't feel like an homage either. That's the thing. I already have a problem with homages, but him blatantly saying, like, I'm not Sean Connery. Like, why would you? I get it. You could interpret it as, like, oh, 006 had a mission recently and didn't have to deal with that or whatever.
Right.
But it was too much, in my opinion. It would have made more sense if, like, you had seen him talking to 006 and reading his report and being like, wow, smooth sailing. I guess should be good for me. And then all this stuff happens. Like, this never happened to the other fella. You know, tie it in a little bit more, but not at it. I'm okay with that, but it was just too much. And then him whistling that song, I was like, you guys, enough.
That was the janitor whistling.
No, it was him.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, someone did it.
It was a janitor sweeping, and he's whistling Goldfinger.
Too bad. I don't like it. So, yeah.
There's always this rumor of, like, maybe it's people just trying to make it like it. He's not talking about Sean Connery. He's talking about this other fella. You know, he picks up Tracy's shoes, and then she rides off, and he's like, this never happened to the other fella. Some people say that's like Prince. Is it Prince Charming from Cinderella? And, like, Cinderella and the glass slippers and... You know, he rides
reaching.
Off.
Reaching.
Yeah, maybe reaching.
We're reaching a little there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know.
I wanted to actually branch off characters and talk about the books. That's what I wanted to say real quick. And that's my biggest problem with this movie. As much as I love this movie, that's my biggest problem with this movie is they adapted a book and they did it very well. I haven't read the book, but, you know, I'm a novice when it comes to the James Bond books. I've only read a few. And this is definitely one on the list to get to soon. They adapted this book very well. However, it's the middle of a trilogy. So, in the previous film, Bond fights Blofeld, essentially. They meet, yada yada. This one, they meet up again. It's like the first time they ever saw each other. I could... take like this movie as its own standalone thing, or maybe it's a prequel or whatever, but they put in so much efforts to homage the other Bond movies to let you know this is Bond, you know, Dr. No stuff, Thunderball stuff, they're whistling Goldfinger. So like continuity wise, this movie doesn't make sense. And I haven't been able to like accept that for what it is, because it is kind of confusing as a viewer. Whether I'm a nostalgic or a novice, you can accept it, I suppose, but I've always had a hard time getting around that just because they're like, let's just stick to the book, essentially. So it doesn't get resolved either. Like the next film after this is Diamonds Are Forever, which you and I have watched, and Bond's like on a brief rampage, like, where is Blofeld? And ultimately gets him and kills him, so he thinks, and then the movie, that's just before the title sequence. So, like, as far as, like, Bond continuity, this one, as I said earlier, it's kind of its own little thing, but it kind of creates a ripple where, like, they're trying for continuity, but they kind of get in their own way in making this movie. I don't know.
That was very scholarly of you.
My scholarly nice, analysis. Yeah. Let's wrap it up, and because we got chicken soup to eat,
yeah.
Noses to blow,
and naps to take.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service, for the novice or the nostalgic?
Definitely the nostalgic.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Because if you haven't seen a Bond film and you start there, it's not going to make any sense, these like random little Easter eggs. As much as I dislike them, they are for the nostalgics, not the novices, and that already alienates the novices by proxy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you?
I agree. This one is like purely, I would never introduce someone to this movie.
Yeah.
With this movie. I think it's played strongest when you've seen other Bond films, so you can appreciate Bond's, as a character, his, you know, getting married, even just that character arc, I suppose, and just seeing what he's gone through as a character and kind of gets resolved in this movie to a degree. Yeah, I think that's only truly appreciated from a nostalgic point of view.
Cool. Well, the verdict is in. It's for the nostalgic. Sorry, guys. Sorry, novices. Not for you. I'm fading. And that's okay, because we gave it our all. And with that, you can find us on Instagram, and only Instagram, at A Good Squeeze, where we post updates about our Bond journey and other such things, Bond-related activities, and make episode announcements. So go ahead and follow. Go ahead and give us a little DM. Slide into our DMs there. We're always, well, ours, you know, August is managing those. So, you know, if you're going to keep it spicy, make it appropriate for him.
Hey, you can hear us wherever you're listening to us right now. We're on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, things like that. Just go ahead and follow along as we go through this Bond journey as novices and nostalgics. And, hey, Merry Squeezemas. Merry Christmas, Squeezemas. Merry Squeezemas, everyone.
And on that note, I'm Margot.
And I'm August.
And this has been...
I'm going to say, like, George Lazenby.
A Good Squeeze!